This morning, it's pretty exciting. We're going to focus on something this morning. But before we get started, I see Tim Chafee here. I heard, is Deb back? Deborah? It's good to have her back from Nicaragua. We're hoping to hear some things and been praying. Not sure what God's doing, but we're certainly open to seeing the hand of God move in that. And we're just glad, and I'm sure you're glad she's home safely. It's probably good to have her back. And after about a month almost, pretty close, so it's good to have her back. This morning, we're going to focus on one thing. Why did we start a church called Grace Ministry? Why are there any churches in the world? What is the purpose of going to church? To do that, I've entitled this message today, Whether or Not, Here I Come. And that could be spelled a couple of different ways, but whether or not, here I come. Talking about the weather, it can change awfully fast on us. And we need to know, people in the world need to know, that the reason that we have church is for one reason. That God says, I've come for one reason. Jesus spoke these words to Zacchaeus. He said, whether you're ready or not, here I come, and I've come for one reason. To seek and to save that which is lost. That's it. That's a pretty simple mission. And so if you can understand, we're kind of doing a nautical theme that today, if you can understand a great big ship called Grace, and we're sailing out into the waters. Now, sometimes people sail into good waters. Sometimes people sail into bad waters. I was on a mission trip in Jamaica one year, and we were down there working on a medical clinic and a church and building bathrooms for the church and putting a little medical center right behind the building and for people in that community to come in and have free care by the government. Well, we took a day away. It's usually between 100 and 115 degrees each day. And one day they said, hey, we're going to take you out, and we're going to go out on this catamaran, and we're going to take you out snorkeling in Montego Bay. I mean, it is one of the most picturesque places, I think, in the world. At least, I haven't been a lot of places in the world, but for me, it was a very pretty place. We took this catamaran out, and as we made our way out into the bay, the water was probably anywhere from 50 to 100 feet deep with all these different coral reefs with every kind of fish, every kind of color you can imagine. We make our way out there. It was sunny, probably 112 degrees. And we got our snorkels and our masks and our flippers, and out into the water we went. With the setting of this Horseshoe Bay, the mountains there on this island, and the ocean as far as you could see the other way. You could almost see the bottom, even as deep as it was. It was picture perfect. We're about 100 yards off of the catamaran when out of the blue, a storm came over the mountain. We weren't ready for it. We weren't expecting it. And it hit fast and furious. The waves rose up probably 10, 12 feet high at least, because at any given point, I could no longer see the boat. And the kids in my youth group panicked. My heart was going pretty good. But I told them all, as the waves started getting higher and higher and the rain started just pounding our backs, it was on us in just a few minutes. I said, swim for the boat, put your head down, keep your face down and your snorkel up, and just go with the waves. Don't panic. Don't put your head up, because the waves will take you under. But sure enough, several of the students started panicking. And I had this one young man in my youth group. He was a senior in high school. He weighed all of maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. John, very tall kid, 6'1" and about as skinny. And I thought, not a strong swimmer in waves like that. And I said, John, put your head down. And so John tried to put his head down. He kept panicking. The problem with putting their heads down was, as the storm came over the mountain, in the cove near the marshes of Montego Bay is where the jellyfish live. When the waves started pushing out with the wind, all of the jellyfish pushed out into the bay where we were snorkeling. There were millions and millions of jellyfish. And as we were swimming towards the boat, everywhere you looked, you could just see jellyfish, and we were trying to avoid them. And kids were getting stung. And many of them didn't want to look under the water for fear. I mean, they were there whether they saw them or not. So John put his head up. He was the last one to get to the boat. And I remember as John is swimming for that boat, I said, John, keep your head down. Don't panic. And he just kept going under. And I'm trying to corral all the kids. And we finally got them all there. John's the last one. He just gets to the boat. And he's going under for the last time. And I watched one of the Jamaican guys, who was one of our guides out there, with no snorkel, with no mask. They open their eyes underwater. I don't know how they do it. They're like fish. And he just grabs a hold of John and yanks him up out of the water. And I'm just watching this going, wow. And then the guy on the boat grabs him and throws him up on the net, on the catamaran. And just literally saves his life. John, he's got stings and welts all over his body from the jellyfish. And he just about went under for the last time. But those guys reached down and grabbed each one of them and pulled them right out of that water. Now, I want you to know today, that's what the church is all about. We're taking this ship out into the waters. It's called the Great Commission. And as we take this boat out, we have one goal, and that is to seek and save the lost. There's a lot of storms in this world. In fact, right now, if you've noticed down in Florida, there's a Hurricane Faye, now Tropical Storm Faye. It's been there for days. It just won't go away. It hit, and it just seems to just say, well, I'm not going anywhere. 15 and 20 and 25 inches of rain in any given spot. I don't think people were ready for something like that. You know, I think that's our lives. Sometimes we get a storm in our lives, and it hits, and it can be 15 and 20 days. And we're thinking, when is this thing going to go away? Before it goes away, we just get pounded. Folks, I want to let you know, the storms are going to come into our lives. We live in Michigan. If you haven't read lately, it seems to be that they'll print and produce about every storm that we have. You just turn on the news and hear something in Detroit. Someone else killed. Another business has gone under. Another scandal of some sort. We have storms that will hit us whether we want it or not. The question isn't whether or not the storm's coming. The question is, what are we going to do in the storm? What I find ironic is people always say, well, where's God in this? I believe that God lets the storms come. He could stop any storm he wants, by the way. But you know what we usually pray as Christians? God, show me your glory. I want to see the hand of God in my life. I don't know about you. How many of you would like to see the hand of God, the glory of God in your life? Okay, most everybody. A few of you, you're not sure of the question. I want to see the glory of God. I pray that all the time. God, show me your glory. I want to see you move. People in this world all the time ask the question, well, where is your God? But I think they're afraid to get into the storm because you can't get the rainbow unless you have the rain. You've got to have the storm in order to see the glory. I believe God allows storms in our lives so that he can show us his power in the storm. Now, if you have your Bibles, I want you to open up real quick to a passage. It's found in Mark chapter 4. And it's a storm in our lives. In Mark chapter 4, you have Jesus who sets out in a boat with his disciples. Now, the boat's making its way across the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus is sleeping in the boat. He's probably tired. And look at what takes place, beginning in verse 35 of Mark chapter 4. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. And here it is. A furious, not a little one, a furious squall came up. And the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, and what was he doing? Sleeping on what? A pillow. Now, I don't know if you've ever been on a boat in a storm. I've shared before that I've been on a boat in a storm with my son Andrew, right after Hurricane Andrew. It was a week later, and the waves were small, they said, and we went fishing in the ocean. And the waves were only 15 feet high. 15 feet, okay, 15 feet is about the speaker here. That's all they were. We got out there, and I didn't bait a hook. I spent 3 hours in the bathroom with my son over the commode, watching our lunch for the second time. He's in a furious storm, and the water is coming over the boat, and Jesus is sleeping on a pillow. I think this is a great picture. There's so many sermons in this. My question is, Jesus, why are you sleeping? He's sleeping because he's sleeping because he knows what's going on in our lives. He's not out of the boat. He's in the boat. But watch what takes place. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care?" There it is. How many times in our lives have we ever said to God, "God, don't you care? Can you not see these waves? Are you aware of this furious thing that's going on in my life?" And how many times we just sit there and wait for an answer. And it's as though Jesus is asleep in our lives. And let's see what happens. Of course, Jesus wakes up. It says, he got up, he rebuked the wind. If I were Jesus, I'd be rebuking the disciples. Because he wants to sleep. And they're waking him up. And it's not a problem. You've got the creator of the universe on your boat. I don't think this storm is an issue. And the disciples, had they learned nothing when he raised the dead? Had they learned nothing when he fed 5,000? Had they learned nothing at all from anything he's ever done? That they can't let him sleep for 5 minutes? How many times we wake up Jesus with these things that we ought to have faith already in, and we have learned nothing from our past with God? We need to learn that God is always faithful in our lives. And so here it is. He says, he rebuked the wind and he said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." The wind died down and it was completely calm. And then he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid?" In other words, "You scaredy cats, what'd you wake me up for? I was having a nice sleep. I was just getting into my REM. I was just having a nice dream. What are you doing?" And then he says, "Do you still have no faith?" Not little faith, no faith. And they were terrified and they asked each other, "Who is this? Who is this? Are you serious?" His disciples are honestly still asking the question, "Who is this guy?" Are you still asking that question in your life? Who is this? You've been serving him your whole life. Maybe for a year, maybe for a few months, maybe for 10 years. And are you still asking the question, "Who is this? Jesus." Get to know him, guys. Get to know him, because today I want you to know the entire purpose of Grace Ministry, the entire purpose of who we are, comes down to these two questions. And the first one is this. Where is Jesus? That's what they want to know. Where is he? He's sleeping. Wake him up. You wake him up. As a ministry, as a ship going out into these storms, here's the first thing. The first thing is this. We need to hold out help to people. Know this. You're never alone in the storm. You're never, ever alone in the storm. There are so many times when we think, "I'm the only one going through this. Does no one understand?" I talk to more people and they say this: "I don't know who to talk to. I don't even know. I can't even talk to my husband or my wife." Kids who say, "I can't talk to my parents. Who do I talk to when I go through this?" Who do you talk to? "I feel so alone going through this. Why am I going through this?" And I want you to know, as a church, it is our mission to let people know you're not alone in this. I told the family, I told the Lewis family, and Kathy's here this morning, I said, "Whatever you need for your daughter, you let us know." She called me up the other day. She said, "You know, we'd love to do a benefit to help pay for some of these expenses." That's a hard thing. If your child was in the hospital fighting for their lives, you would know what to do. And I said, "You know what? Whatever you need, you're not alone. I'll let my church know. I'm letting you know. We may do a benefit to help out this family." Well, why would we do that? Because we always hold out a hand, because people need to know that they're not alone. When you're in the hospital, you need to know you're not alone. When you're going through whatever it is in your life, you need to know you're not alone. When the devil's coming at you and hitting you with everything he's got, even the kitchen sink, you need to know you're not alone. When you're in the hurricane of your life, when life is furious, you need to know this: you're not alone. You're never alone. Jesus tells us we're never alone. Joshua chapter 1, God said, "I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Joshua, be strong and of good courage." Let me say this again in the next verse. Be strong and courageous. I am with you. Do not turn to the right or to the left. I'm with you. And then he says it a third time to Joshua in one chapter. He says, did I not tell you to be very strong? For I am with you. Didn't he say in Psalm 139, if you go to heaven, I'm there. If you go to hell, I'm there. If you go to the highest mountains, I'm there. If you go to the deepest ocean, I am there. There's nowhere you could go that I am not there. God promises he is always, always with us. For Diane, God was with her. When she said on a very rainy night on July 31st, when she said, God, I feel alone. If you're there, let me know. And God showed up. God showed up. And you know God, how God shows up? He uses you. He wants to know how far can you throw a rope? Because that's what we do. How far can you throw a rope? And you say, I'm kind of older or I'm not very new at this thing, so I could maybe throw a rope about this far. And God says, good, that's as far as I need you. I might just need you to do one little thing to touch someone's life in the smallest way. And I love this. They wanted to find Jesus. You know, there's four kinds of people in the world. I learned this. This is in my psychology class. They talk about four different types of people when people are going through this. There's the first kind of, there's the realizer, there's the mobilizer, the sympathizer, and the empathizer. Here's the realizer. This is the person that looks down in the river, sees the waterfall, looks at the canoe that you're in, about to go over the waterfall that's going to destroy your life, the last straw. And the realizer stands. This is a kind of person in our world. They go, hey, there's a waterfall. These are what I call Captain Obvious people. Really, there's a waterfall. And you're about to go over it. No kidding. They're the kind of people that like to tell you your problems. You probably got some people in your life that love, well, they don't love to, but it is their gift. They have been blessed by divine appointment to be in your life to tell you all of the problems that you have. And they don't have any solutions, but they are very good at telling you, hey, boy, your life is really going downhill. And you're thinking to yourself, really, I was completely unaware of that until you pointed out the obvious. Thank you. Now, they stand on the mountaintops, and they will tell you how horrible things are. They're the kind of people, that's why I really have a hard time. And if you're here and you work for a newspaper, I apologize to you. I do not get the newspaper. People call me all the time. Pastor, did you read this article? I didn't. Well, we'll get it to you. I said, well, if you do, great. If you don't, I'm not missing anything. I've never gotten the newspaper since I've lived here in 11 years. I honestly don't think we did for a short time and we canceled. A very short time. Yeah, we needed some liner for our birds or something. I don't. I don't need anybody telling me about my world. I can pretty much figure it out. Now, you may get it for different reasons. But there are people who like to just shout out all the things that are wrong with this world, and they don't offer a single solution. It's there. There are people on the mountainside, and they're hollering it out. They're the realizers. There's a second type of person who they're not quite on the mountain. Oh, by the way, those people that are realizers, not only do they like to tell you that you have a problem, they like to tell everyone that you have a problem. You know the kind of people? Can I just say, ignore them. If they're going to stand on a mountainside and tell you the problems and they're way up there a distance, there's always going to be critical people in your life. If you take time to try to answer critical people, you know what happens? Two more critical people are going to raise up on another mountainside. Don't have anything to do with them. They have no solution to your problem. You already know you have a problem. The second type of person is this. They're the mobilizers. They're the ones who will walk down by the water's edge and they'll look around for help. They're the kind of people who will dial 911, which is great. There's nothing wrong with these kind of people. They'll say, hey, we've got a problem here. And they're looking for something. They're looking for something to toss to you. They're not going to get in the water because that's dangerous. And if they get in the water, then that means they've gotten involved. You know how people don't want to get too involved. I see that they're broke down on the road, but I pull over, how long is this going to take? It happens. I've had lots of people drive right by me when I've been broken down, busted down, flipped on my 10-speed bicycle, bleeding on the side of the road in Lexington. and watching cars go by going, hey, he's bleeding. As I'm laying there holding my... I've been there and I've watched people go by. There's the realizers, hey, they're bleeding. And then there's that second group, the mobilizers. They might even call someone and say, hey, there's a guy bleeding on the side of the road. You should send some help. You know, 15, 20 minutes or an hour later, somebody shows up. It's great to have people who are mobilizers. They just don't quite want to get involved. Then there's the third type of person. That's the sympathizer. These are the kind of people that go, man, I need to do something. And they'll get down into the water and they'll actually try to do stuff. They're not sure what to do, but their hearts are being broken. They see what's going on. They're like, hey, can I help? Here, reach out. And these people try to meet us halfway. And it's great. These people, sympathizers, are great. They're trying to reach over and kind of get a hold of us. And they're grabbing oars and they're grabbing ropes and sticks. And they're reaching out with any kind of resource that they might have. And these people use their money. They use their time. They try to find ways to help out other people. They're good folks. Then there's the fourth type of person. And that's the empathizer, to empathize with us. And this person jumps into the water, climbs into the boat, and says, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? We're going over a waterfall. Why are you in here? I just want you to know, I've been over a few waterfalls myself. And this is going to be rough in the next few months. I just thought you could use someone to go through it with you. Why? Because you should never go through this alone? That's an empathizer. That's what the church should be, empathizers. You know what happens? We get into a storm and we want to see the glory of God. We jump in, and you know what happens? Just before God does his miracle that we can see the rainbow in this storm, you know what we do? We pray a prayer. And here's what most people pray in the storms of their life. Dear God, thank you for this storm. No. Here's what they pray, and you know it. You prayed it, some of you. Dear God, get me out of this thing. Right? And maybe that's a good prayer. But maybe God put you in there so he could show his glory. Maybe you're in that storm so God can do something. And you know what? We say, God, get me out of here. And do you know what God usually does? He gets us out of there. Before the miracle ever happens, we're not even in the storm anymore. I believe that God says, you know what? You're in it. Stay in it. I don't want you to be out of it. I want you to go through it. Because if you'll go through it, look on the other side of the storm. There's a rainbow, a promise. And I always put a promise with my storms. And he said that 4,000 years ago to Noah. I will never do this again. Anytime this happens, I'll show you my promise. I'll give you a rainbow in every storm. And there is. And I want you to know that maybe God is taking you through something. And instead of this time saying, God, get me out of this, say, God, take me through this so I can see the other side. Because you know what's going to happen most likely in many situations that we go through that God put us in or allowed us to be in? We say, God, take us out. He takes us out, and you know what ends up happening? We end up coming right back to that storm again. Because we're saying, God, show me your glory. Show me your glory. He says, I keep trying to. And just before the glory happens, you asked me to take you out of the glory. But it was a storm. Exactly, it was a storm. And Jesus was asleep in the storm saying, look what I'll do in your storm. I'm exactly where I needed to be. I am in the storm. And I'm not panicking. I'm on the cushion. Trust me. I think that's what God's saying to the church. Let people know, folks. Let people know that no matter what they're going through, that they don't have to go through it alone. You don't have to go alone. I think the church has missed this. I think there's a lot of folks, and I love when Diane came to me and said, this whole shepherd's idea, I said, yes, that's what God's laying on my heart. I think too many people walk into churches, they sit in pews, they sit in chairs, they walk out of churches, they have their hearts with all their needs, with all their prayers, with all their issues, and they walk right out with the same things, and they've never touched anybody or connected to anybody, and they still feel as alone. You can be in here right now with 250 people, and you can still be sitting in your seat feeling alone because you're going to go home and know you're going to go through that and you don't have anybody to talk to. And God says, don't let this world go alone. I think we need to bring a message. I think we need to throw a rope to people. The second question is, who is this? Who is this Jesus? Do you know who Jesus is? Can you believe the disciples asked that question? Maybe like you come in and say, Pastor, I need to talk to you about my salvation. This Jesus. Can you talk to me about Jesus? And I say, I don't really know him that well. I'm not sure who he is. Wait a minute, you're the pastor. These guys have been with him, and they said, who is this? Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? That's a great question. I want you to know in your life right now that the wind and the waves obey him. No matter what it is in your life, Jesus has the authority to speak anything into your life right now. That's right. You say, well, I don't have wind. I don't have waves. You have children? You got wind. You got finances? You got waves. You got a mortgage? You got wind and waves and everything else. We all have those things. And God is trying to let us know, let the world know, let the world know that God has authority in your life if you'll let him be Jesus. If you get to know who he is, he wants you to know he's in charge of your life. He wants to be strong. He wants to have a strong hold in our lives and lift us up out. Here it is. I believe that here we are in the ship and we're going out to sea. And I can see in the distance the black sky. I can see the lightning strike in the ocean. And somebody comes up and they say, Pastor, what kind of church is this? And I say, take a look. This is who we are at Grace. And they look and they say, I don't think I want to be a part of this church. Well, why not? Well, look at all these other boats. They're going over there and it's really sunny and nice. I said, that's great. I'm sure we're going to have sunny, great days. But why are we going out there again? Because there are people floating out in that ocean that if we don't get there soon, they're not coming back up. Now, you can go to the beach or you can go out into the ocean. What do you want to be a part of? And I say to every one of you, grab hold of one of those gold tickets that talk about what you can do as a part of this boat. Where will you row? Because I don't care how big the tide is. If we row together, we can make it through any storm together. Because we are a life-saving station and people need help. We live in this world and there are storms. And if you're not willing to row, you're probably on the wrong boat. Welcome to Grace. Grab an oar and put it in the water. But if you're on for a free ride or you're a stowaway thinking that you're not going to jump in and jump on board, our mission is to step in, to step up, and then to step out and to go out and row into the world. God wants to grab a hold of us. I heard that. And you probably saw this on the news if you're old enough. In 1982, in the winter, there was an airplane trying to take off in Washington, D.C. And the airplane never quite got going, and it crashed and it hit a bridge, crushing a few cars, smashing the plane, and falling into the Potomac River and crushing through the ice. Some of you remember that. In that one moment, as all these people are in this frozen water, drowning, and this plane burning, pieces of the fuselage sitting in the water, an onlooker running up to it dives into the water and begins rescuing as best as he can and grabbing a hold of people. It's a true story. He dives in and he starts grabbing a hold of bodies. He starts grabbing a hold of people to rescue them and pull them out of this. I can't imagine on that day how cold the water was. I can't imagine how hot the fire was. But on January 13th, immediately after that takeoff in the snowstorm at Washington National Airport, that accident killed 78 people, including four motorists on the 14th Street Bridge. A few survivors from the aircraft were rescued from that river by civilians. And they were commended during President Reagan's State of the Union inauguration, or his speech a few days later, Below freezing waters and heavy ice, it made swimming out to them all but impossible. But one man, Roger Olean, a sheet metal foreman at St. Elizabeth's, a Washington hospital for the mentally ill, was on his way home across the 14th Street Bridge. In his truck, when he heard a man yelling that there was an aircraft in the water, he was the first to jump in the water and not even thinking about his own life, his family. He jumped in the water and he just began grabbing people. Passenger number 6 became very famous because when the helicopter finally got there, and one of the only ways to really reach the masses in the middle of that Potomac River, that helicopter, rescue copter showed up, and they began lowering lines, but they could see that the people holding on to that ice were becoming so numb from hypothermia, they couldn't hold on to anything, they were slipping under the water. And all they know him as is passenger number 6. That's what they called him. Began grabbing people and putting them in the harness ahead of him, and they began pulling them out across the ice and over to shore. And then they lowered 2 lines down, knowing the time was short. And he kept putting people, grabbing them one after the other in that frozen water and hooking them up to that harness. And then himself going under and drowned. The only one, medical examiner said, who drowned. Everybody else dying of the fire or hypothermia. He gave up his life, and he kept grabbing a hold of people and grabbing a hold of people and grabbing a hold of people. And isn't that what God calls us to as a church? Just reach out. How hard is it to reach out? Say, hey, you want to have some lunch? Hey, do you want to come on over? We're going to barbecue. Hey, do you want to talk? Go get a Coke or coffee? How hard is it to say, hey, let me pray for you? And I believe that that's what Jesus is saying here. Not only you're not alone, but not only are you not alone, but I'm here for you. And I will grab a hold of you, and I'll keep coming back, and I'll keep coming back. Think about how many times God has come back for you, even when you've blown it. I don't know your testimony, but I know God is a God of second, third, fourth chances. In fact, he told Peter finally, he says, Peter, you just need to be quiet here. Because Peter was getting so mad. How many times? How many times do I have to put up with this guy? One of the other disciples. And Jesus looked at Peter and said, Peter, 70 times 7 a day. Reach out. Help your brother. Could you imagine Peter going, dive in the water 490 times today and help your brother. That's what we're about here at Grace, helping each other out.